Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors, where each episode we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show we are looking at Joshua Marsden and his 2004 film Maria Full of Grace. Returning on the show today to talk about Maria Full of Grace is Professor Marie Westaver. Professor Westaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So this is an interesting coming-of-age movie, because like a lot of coming-of-age movies, it's, you know, it's a young girl. She's you know, the teenager doesn't really know what's the next point in her life, that kind of thing. And she discovers what she wants to be sort of at the end, but how she gets through that is very unusual, is because, you know, is she becomes a drug mule and goes, you know, all the way across the world to smuggle drugs into America. It's, you know, not your typical coming of age story.
Maybe not. But I think one of the reasons this works in the classroom so well is I think students can relate to her problems, that mm-hmm. no matter what she chooses, all she has is bad choices. So is mm-hmm. she going to stay and have a bad life, mm-hmm. or is she going to be a drug mule, which is a terrible decision to make, but maybe have a chance at life? And then once she's in the States, do you want her to go back to Columbia or do you want her to stay? And it creates all of these great questions that they can think about in terms of themselves. What would they do? What would you do?
Yeah, and you're right. It's like every situation she has, it's sort of just bad, because she's under pressure at home because she's pretty, I think she's the only one working.
Mm-hmm. So that's what it looks like.
So she's basically puts the bread on the table for the entire family. And, you know, she stays there, she's going to be probably doing that for a very, very long time, where everybody's just going to rely on her and leech off of her.
Yeah, she lives with her mother, her grandmother, her sister, and her sister's mm-hmm. baby. And she's only 17.
Yeah.
But it looks like she's providing the resources mm-hmm. for the family.
And the other option was to, you know,
marry
the loser boyfriend, who, you know, it's clear that they don't get along very well. And you could just tell if they get married or, you know, they go off together, that's just going to end it in a disaster.
That's a great scene where she tells him that she's pregnant. He tries to step up and do the right thing, but she insists that he get real, like, you know, you don't love me, I don't love you. That scene plays so well in the classroom, because when she asks him, do you love me? And he goes, oh, man, not that again. Mm-hmm. There's a big laugh that goes around the classroom, because people have either said it to somebody or they've heard mm-hmm. it from somebody.
Yeah. And then, so you got that. You got the home situation, that situation, or just, you know, continue being a drug mule. Basically, you don't know, one burst capsule and you're dead.
Right.
So she basically at the end, sort of, spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't seen this movie, but at the end she chose the right to probably the least bad decision, the lesser of all the evils, you know.
You know, another thing that's important to mention is that the only job apparently where she lives is at this flower plantation mm-hmm. where they treat everybody terribly.
Yeah.
And she finally, you know, walks out on that job. And then, you know, her family's like, well, you got to go back. You got to eat crow mm-hmm. and get that job back, because we need that job. You have to have that job. And she feels very pressured. She's got to mm-hmm. do something. Go crawling back. Become a drug mule, try to be a maid in Bogota. I mean, she tries mm-hmm. all kinds of really responsible things. I mean, she's a very, she's old for her age.
Mm-hmm. And I think how she gets, you know, why she becomes a drug mule feels a bit similar to, a bit like The Wire, where The Wire looks at not just, you know, the drug addicts, the drug dealers, and the cops. He looks at the politicians. It also looks at the people who are affected. So not even the addicts, just like people who are just in the area where drugs are being dealt and how that affects them. Like this movie, she's not an addict or anything. She doesn't do drugs, but she's still getting sucked into the business because she's desperate. And I think that's what's really good. It just shows how even people who don't do drugs or deal drugs can still get sucked into this, you know, business, because they're desperate for money and they would do anything for it, like being a drug mule.
Or having to go back to work at that flower plantation. You know, mm-hmm. when you have no options, you really are vulnerable. And she is underage, even though she mm-hmm. says she's 18, to the guy who's doing the drug mule organization, I guess you would call mm-hmm. it. The actress herself, though, spent some time working in a actual flower plantation. Hmm. I think it was a couple of weeks, so she would know what that was like. 2 weeks cutting roses. But she did not meet with any real drug mules, because she wanted to seem as clueless as the character.
And that works really good, because the fact is that she's this, you know, 17-year-old girl. I mean, you get us put a 17-year-old girl in that, you know, type of situation where she's got to go, you know, fly across countries, smuggling drugs inside of her body. You know, it's a very delicate situation, and I think she does it very well.
Well, the actress, she's in every single scene, and there is never a moment when you're not completely on her side, to the point where you find yourself rooting for the wrong thing. You find yourself thinking, come on, get those drugs into the United States. And you think, wait a minute, what am I saying? But you're so concerned for her. You know, you so want her to succeed somehow.
Yeah. And it leads to some very kind of hard to watch scenes in the movie, like the original scene when she's got to swallow the drugs. Mm-hmm. You know, you cringe a little bit because every time she's putting it in her, you can tell she's having trouble swallowing the pellets. And then just one of the hardest things to watch is when, you know, they go out in the bathroom at the airplane and she's got to swallow them again. And that's just, oh, man.
Well, see, that's that, you know.
But that probably happens.
Oh,
imagine.
You know what they say? This movie's based on 1,000 true stories. Mm-hmm. So it has to have happened to somebody. But one thing you understand when you're watching it is the first time she meets with the guy who's organizing the deal, he tells her they're going to give her some rolls of film. She's going to take them to the United States and they're going to be developed there. That's not what happens at all. Yeah. And then the pellets, you know, you see her swallowing them. I mean, but swallowing 60 of them. I mean, just the fact of swallowing 60 things wrapped in a balloon, that would just hurt your throat if nothing else.
It's like taking all the comedy out of the Cool Hand Luke 50 egg scene, you know.
But yeah, and the risk is the other part of it. But yes, they also say every one of those pellets has to make it, you know. Because if any of them are missing, we're going to visit your family and, you know, it's not good. So, you know, when she goes to the bathroom and they come out, you can't just throw them away because they're going to count them. And you also can't just stick them in your, you know, makeup bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have only that choice. But that's a terrible thing to find out at that moment.
Yeah. And just even the scene when, you know, it's the scene when one of the friends, it bursts in her stomach and then it kills her. And just like that's just, you know. Hard to watch, and that's probably happened a great deal many times as well. But go ahead.
Yeah, has to have. I mean, because it's just a numbers game, really.
Yeah, and then I talked a little bit about The Wire. Another show that I just mentioned earlier before we were talking was Narcos, which anybody knows the Netflix series about catching Colombian drug dealer Pablo Escobar. And I believe this was set in the setting of the story is in the modern, so it'd be like early 2000s, I believe.
Well, this came out in 2004, so it's the right time period.
Okay, so it's still showing the drug scene in Colombia, and even though Pablo Escobar's been dead for over 25 years now, I think you still feel you're still feeling the effects of the drug deal, the drug cartels, and everything in that country still.
Yeah, all underground though. You don't get a sense for like impending violence. There's no guns and. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
pressure.
You bring up a good point. It's one thing I found really interesting about this movie. When you think of like, you know, gangsters and drug dealers and something, or even foreign films, you think of maybe like City of God,
right?
Or maybe even like a Scorsese movie or Scarface, which is stylized as hell. These really stylized, like shootout, you know, cool camera movements. This is almost shot like a documentary. A lot of handheld camera. There's not a lot of cool, you know, flashy stuff. It almost makes you feel like you're right there with her, you know, smuggling the drugs into America.
Yeah, you also feel like when you see the situation that she's in, where she is basically supporting her family, you think, wow, she is being forced to pay for mistakes she didn't even make. And then you realize she's pregnant too, but her sister has had a baby and is living at home and isn't working, and the baby needs medicine and all this stuff. It's a lot of responsibility for her to take on when she didn't. She's underage. She should be going to school. She should be, you know, she's not the desperate City of God kind of character. She's close enough to being successful, even in a small way, that more people can relate to her. She just needs a little help.
Yeah, she's, you know, like you said, it's, you know, she's almost like your typical teenage girl.
Right.
She doesn't know what she's going to do with her life. She's feeling a lot of pressure. And that pressure sort of leads her to making a very bad decision, becoming a drug mule.
Even that's not for some sort of get-rich-quick kind of thing. Mm-hmm. She's not naive in that way. She's not thinking, oh, this is going to solve all my problems and what could go wrong. I think she's very aware of what could go wrong.
Yeah, and I even think when he tells her, like, oh, it's going to be this roll of film, I even think she knows, no, it's not. It's going to be drugs.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Now, we could talk a little bit more about the actress Catalina Moreno, and this was a great performance by her, like we've said, and this was really sort of propelled her into international stardom because it got her an Oscar nomination.
Yes, the first Colombian to be nominated for an Academy Award and one of very few actors to receive an Academy Award nomination for their screen debut.
Interesting. Wow.
And she's terrific in this. And one, when I show this in class, I like to juxtapose it with an episode from Paris, Je T'aime, which is directed by Walter Salles. And the class watches Motorcycle Diaries, so it's a good segue. But in the short that he does, and they're all love stories set in Paris, Catalina Moreno plays a young woman. It's almost told completely without any dialogue. It's spent mostly, she gets up, she takes her baby to the daycare place, which is like a million cribs, like completely nameless, faceless, sings a song, and then goes to work. And you see her, you know, walking to the subway, you see her get on a subway, you see her change subways, you see her get on a bus. You know, it's this long, long trip. And then she finally gets there, and she's watching some other woman's baby. And the woman treats her like, well, you know, I might be a little bit late, not much, just an hour or so. That's okay, right? And of course, he has to say, yeah, it's fine. Woman leaves, and then she, the baby cries, and she goes in and sings the same song to the other baby, and she's looking out the window, obviously thinking of her own. And it's a great little episode anyway, but it also is a terrific counter to Maria Full of Grace, because it makes you think, well, okay, after she has the baby, then what? It's not like it's all roses. You know, there are still going to be some compromises, and why can't the situation be better sort of thing? But it's a great little short, goes with the movie very well.
That's Paris.
Paris, Je T'aime.
Paris, I love you.
Paris, I love you.
Yeah, I know a lot of directors did that. Like the Coen brothers did a little part.
Yes,
like
theirs is very funny.
Alfonso Cuarón.
Each director takes a different arrondissement. So, of course, Wes Craven took the one with the cemetery in it. You know.
And so, in other performances that stood out, I know. Her friend character of Blanca. I was looking at her, and it was her first film she's did, and the only film she did, I believe.
I thought she was a good character, and that she was the person. She was shrewd. She was actually a little more, I think, shrewd than Maria. But you can see she's going to get sucked into Lucy's life. She's not going to just do it the one time. I mean, one thing I want to know what you think is, I had the sense that after Maria did this, she was going to stay here. She wasn't going to keep going back and keep doing this for a living. I felt like she figured, yeah, this is a terrible thing to do. But now that I'm here, I can make the best of it. But I didn't think this was a career for her.
I do kind of, especially when she meets the cartel and they're in her face and they're threatening her and everything. I think she looks at that, and just seeing the fact that Lucy died, I can think she knows that this is not something I want to do, that this is it for me. And knowing that she probably can't go back there, she's probably just going to, I figured she's probably going to stay in America.
Now, speaking of that scene where she meets back up with the cartel and hands over the drugs and they give her the money after some struggle, they filmed that after they'd almost wrapped, like a month after everything else. It was the last scene that they shot. And everybody had kind of gotten out of rehearsing, so they were having a hard time getting into character. So the director said, look, just improvise. And they did. And that was the scene they used when they were doing the introduction to the Academy Awards for Best Actress. But that scene was the one they showed for her performance.
Interesting. I didn't know that. And it was all improv, and it was all shot like after everything else.
Yes.
Wow. Cool. And, you know, one thing I did want to get your opinion on. Now, obviously, with the title Maria Full of Grace, you think is there some sort of, like, religious subtext in the movie? Because she's wearing she's wearing the cross necklace. And you even look at the poster, it's very provocative because she looks like she's receiving communion. Mm-hmm. But instead of like, you know, the bread thing, it's a cocaine pellet. So that's a very provocative poster. Do you think that with that title, with the poster, is there some sort of religious? I didn't see anything, but I was wanting to get your take. Do you see like any religious subtext in the film?
Well, only in the Catholic thing, the host being, you know, used in the poster as the, it's really a cocaine or heroin pellet. Being full of grace, though, that does make it seem somewhat religious. But I think that's just going back to that idea that she's pregnant. So maybe she's got a girl and she's going to name it Grace. That's what I always think. But in the end, there's that intel sign that's behind her as she's walking back to the United States side at the airport. And the intel sign says it's what's inside that counts. So I think it is trying to reinforce that. But getting back to the thing about the other performances, I really like the guy who plays Don Fernando. He seems very real. And I liked Carla, the sister. Kind mm-hmm. of hard-bitten, but still very kind.
Yeah.
But wary. But Lucy seemed very flat to me. And I didn't know if that she just had to be very guarded. Like, maybe you can't have any friends because no one can know what you do.
I think that was sort of it. That I think even though she's only done it twice, not like a lot of times, but still twice is enough to feel PTSD or shell-shocked by the stuff you've been through. I think even the fact that she kind of knew that something was going on with her stomach, and she probably feared that what would really happen with the cocaine exploding inside her. Maybe the fact that, you know, she was so guarded and reserved, maybe that just came off as, I guess, a wooden acting performance.
Well, and I wonder if it was deliberate, because she had to be so private. And one of the things that comes out of her being a character at all is mm-hmm. that you realize what the situation is going to be for Maria. How is she going to explain to her family why she's never coming back? Or is she going to pretend that she's in Bogota forever? I mean, come on. At some point, you have to be real. And Lucy could never do that. She kept trying to visit her sister, and she thought, "What am I going to say? How'd you get here?"
And then even if you don't deliver the drugs, then they specifically say, "We know your family," and they even specifically, "We know your little girl." I mean, your sister's little girl. That she knows that she can't keep doing that, or her entire family's going to get mm-hmm. killed. So in a way, she's got to face up and do something. She can't keep on the run forever. Otherwise, other people will suffer.
The other performance that I really like is Selena's Leyva. She plays one of the customs agents. And the reason I mention her is because she's in Orange is the New Black. She plays like the leader of the Latina gangs. And it's nice when you see somebody mm-hmm. like that. It's like, oh, yeah, you know her from another show.
Like TV, you know, TV stuff. I brought up Wire, Narcos. You just brought up Orange is the New Black. Interesting thing that this was done through HBO Films.
Yes.
So I was wondering what you thought of, like, did HBO, was this like a released on HBO when it came
out?
Yeah,
it was an HBO original programming.
Interesting.
And Catalina Moreno said that she didn't think it was going to be a big movie. She thought it was just going to be a little cable thing. She was surprised how big it became.
And then it like took off in theaters.
Yes.
Interesting. I didn't know that. You're kind of seeing that, you know, getting a little bit off on a tangent, but seeing that a little bit now with a lot of Netflix movies. I think some of them are getting even releases in theaters, even though that ticks off a lot of theater people. But you're seeing a lot of Netflix movies being released in theaters, and they're not just staying on the internet platform.
Yeah, I'm not sure what kind of release it got. I just know that it did very well after mm-hmm. it came out on HBO.
So yeah, and
it must have been released though, or it wouldn't have been on the Academy's list.
Yeah, I know. I looked, and it even made a profit at the box office because it was it made $12 million to its $4 million budget.
I also really like this movie because it's about a young woman who is. She's got agency. She's self-aware. She's not a typical person because most of us don't have to make the choices that she makes. But enough so that, you know, you really don't see a really good, strong female heroine like this very often.
Especially at such a young age. Yeah, and you're right. And, you know, she's not clueless. And that's, we talked about it before. She knows what's going on. She knows, and like, Even though she's not, you know, intimidated by the drug dealers, even when somebody dies or they're even like saying this and that to her and they're probably threatening to kill her and her family, she doesn't cry or freak out or have a meltdown. She's always very calm and reserved throughout the entire movie, even when, you know, things are about to happen.
Yeah, I like the fact that they didn't make her character so perfect that you couldn't relate to her at all. Like she flat out lies to the customs people. Mm-hmm. I'm not carrying drugs. I mean, just absolutely lies, which of course you have to do. But, you know, they don't try to make it, you know, they don't try to make it easy, you know, where she can sort of, without saying something that's blatantly untrue. You know what I mean? They make her real. She's mm-hmm. made mistakes. You can tell she doesn't really love the boyfriend. But you can also see how when you don't have any money, resources, things to do, whatever. Of course, she's going to get pregnant. It, mm-hmm. It's all very predictable. But you don't hold it against her, yeah. I guess, is what I'm saying.
She's a likable character, but she isn't perfect.
Right.
And even to a little bit similar to a film we talked about quite a while ago was La Femme Nikita.
Yes.
Where she's made a lot of mistakes, done some things to innocent people that didn't deserve it, but even at the end, you're still hoping for her to come out on top at the end.
Yeah, there's even a scene where she walks by a flower shop in New York City. And you mm-hmm. see her looking at the flowers and you think, wow, now she's on the other side of the world. Those are probably from Colombia. I wonder if any of those roses were from that plantation.
So now looking, now that we've talked a lot about the ending and just, so what do you see happening to her? Obviously she's staying in America, but do you think like she, like that flower shop, was she going to try to get a job there, maybe doing what she did? Or will she just try something completely different? Or is she, you know, is she going to go back? She had that appointment for the child. Is she going to go back and take care of the kid? You know, what do you see happening to her?
Well, I see her staying in the United States. I hope that her character would come to some sort of, I don't know what the word is. The way things were left with Carla was bad. You know, mm-hmm. Carla blamed her, which I didn't really think. She didn't really have anything to do with Lucy's death, mm-hmm. other than be involved in the same industry. But she lied, so that's
yeah,
that
she lied. I think that's what hurt her the most.
But there was a whole community there. You know, you could see that she found places where people spoke Spanish. They had street food that was similar to what she was used to. There were people like Don Fernando who could find you a job. So I like to think that she, you know, found a community where she could stay. I don't know how she explained it to her family.
Do you think with that character Lucy and Lucy's family? Do you think that eventually the sister is going to forgive her, you know, and saying like, you know, she'll realize that, you know, that wasn't your fault. You know, I don't appreciate that you lied to me, but I'll forgive it. And maybe she'll help her, like, you know, find a place to live or find her a job or something.
Hey, the two of them are going to have kids they need childcare for. Maybe they can work something out.
Yeah, maybe she can. Hey, she's 17 years old. That's right. Perfect age for babysitting.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so... So we could talk a little bit about, I'll be perfectly honest, you said this was her debut film. What a debut. I haven't seen any other movies from Catalina Moreno, and be honest, I never even heard of her until this movie. Looking up, she had a brief role in a film I've seen called A Most Violent Year, but it's like a very blink and you'll miss her role. Have you seen any other movies she's been in?
I haven't. The only other thing I've seen her in, like I said, was the short from Paris Je T'aime. Okay. Which, like I said, seems like an extension of... You know, like 6 months later or, you know, 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. And so we've forgotten to talk about the director for a while, Josh Marsden. Once again, he's only done a couple of movies. He's done a lot of TV work. One thing I noticed was a show I've seen called 6 Feet Under. He did an episode of that. He did a few episodes of Law and Order. He has done two other movies. One was Forgiveness of Blood, which was, it's about an Albanian war, and it's about a teenage boy, so he's kind of going back to that innocence of youth thing. And he did a sci-fi movie with, I can't pronounce her name, Rachel Weisz, called Complete Unknown. Have you seen either of those movies?
I have, actually. He's an interesting guy. He worked in Paris as a journalist for Life, and then for ABC News during the Gulf War, and then... taught in Prague for a while as an English teacher, and then came back to the U.S., graduated in Chicago with a master's in political science.
Wow, interesting.
And then got a film direction degree from New York University. So he has done a lot of different things. And I think The Forgiveness of Blood shows a lot of his political science background, because that's a very serviceable movie. But I don't think it has the heart that Maria Full of Grace has. And the other movie you mentioned, Complete Unknown, I watched this weekend because I knew we were going to be talking about Marsden. And I had just discovered that movie, and it's really an interesting idea. Rachel Weisz plays this woman who a man comes across her as a character, her character, and he hasn't seen her in a long time. And she's somebody else now. I mean, literally, she is somebody else. Yes. Okay. Different name, everything. And she's very unapologetic about it. Kind of like, yeah, well, I did that for a while. And then I decided, you know, I want to do and be somebody else. So I did. And at first, you're sort of shocked because nobody does that, right? Nobody gets to do that. Right. Yeah. You don't get to just discard a life and go start another one. But it's not illegal. And what's wrong with that, really? So it explores that idea.
Interesting.
Which I think he sort of started off, Marsden did, with that idea in Maria Full of Grace, because she just... stops her life in Colombia, mm-hmm. and she's just going to be somebody else.
Okay.
And, you know, what do you think about that? I think it's kind of an intriguing concept.
So are either of those, would you put on the same level as this movie?
I think Complete Unknown is not as, it's not done quite as well as Maria Full of Grace, but I think it's definitely first runner up.
Okay. All right. So then last question I'll have is, How do you bring this film into your class? Which class do you bring this into?
I use this in women in film.
Okay.
I've also used this in film and philosophy in terms of an ethical question. You know, what would you do with these circumstances? What do you expect her to do? And I also use it in world cinema when I get to Spanish film. Sometimes I use movies that are Spanish but aren't from Spain, like The Secret in Their Eyes from Argentina, for example. Uh-huh. But this one's a good one because I don't really have a lot of movies in that class that really have a female character that my students can really relate to. Mm-hmm. And it's also something, it's topical, you know, the idea of, you know, people who are here who come in, you know, yeah. on a plane and then they never leave and, you know, they just sort of disappear into the fabric of the country. It's something that people talk about, but until you see the movie, you don't actually think about it being a person, why they would do it and what you think mm-hmm. about it when you know it's an individual instead of this, you know, a big problem with a big capital B and capital P.
Yeah, and I forgot to mention is it shines a different face on the drug scene. You know, it's not the dealers, like I said, or the cops, or the users, the typical people you would see in movies about drugs. It's the drug mules, and you don't see a lot of movies about drug mules. And sometimes it can be somebody completely innocent who's very desperate, like a 17-year-old girl who's pregnant.
They also, it's also interesting that the movie's shot in Ecuador. So while you're looking at the cool scenery, how often do you see stuff from Ecuador?
No, not a lot. Okay, well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about director Josh Marsden and his 2004 film Maria Full of Grace. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, over there, it's too perfect. Everything's straight.